you for listening to the Just Completed program. If you'd like to offer feedback on any of our programming, please email us at info@wpfw.org.
District Collective starts the new year with their inaugural Creators Super Jam. The Super Jam brings top rappers, singers, and beatmakers from the DMV to the Atlas Performing Arts Center for an evening of original songs and jams that I'm sure that you enjoy. The show begins at 7 p.m. For tickets and more info, go to atlasarts.org. That's Tuesday, January 9th at the Atlas Performing Arts Center on 8th Street Northeast. See you at the Super Jam.
Peace, y'all. This is Rod Stars.
This is G1. Together, we Rebel Diaz.
And when we out here in D.C., the DMV, we bump WPFW.
Washington.
Every Tuesday, 9 to 10 a.m., Voices with Vision. You heard? Understand. We've been trying to move this struggle from a lower to a higher level.
This is Voices with Vision, bringing you news and analysis.
It's about cutting-edge social justice issues by mixing various voices and ideas
with information, cultural expressions, and commentary.
Voices with Vision airs every Tuesday on your jazz and justice station, WPFW.
Good morning, good people. Welcome to the January 9th, 2024 edition of Voices with Vision, the show that's not for the politically faint of heart, which makes it perfect for listeners like you, people with open minds and courageous hearts. I'm Nefer Freeman in the virtual studio with Brother Craig. What's going on, Brother Craig? What's going on?
Hey, good morning, Nefer, and good morning to our radio listeners and podcast subscribers. Today we have a special guest that we'll be talking with who's been on the show before. He's got a lot of organizational affiliations that reflect his commitment to fighting for justice and freedom for the people that include Black Alliance for Peace, the Ujima People's Progress Party, Sons of Reawakening, and the Young Peoples for Progress. I'm talking about our brother and comrade Petros Ban, who will be discussing his latest article published in Hood Communist titled Montgomery County Chooses Genocide Over Community.
It's always good to talk with young people on the move, bringing their insights and strength to the movement. This morning, we'll also be speaking with Ajamu Baraka, chairperson of the Coordinating Committee of the Black Alliance for Peace, and Adrian Pine, one of the coordinators, along with Ajamu, of the newly formed International Coalition to Stop Genocide in Palestine. They'll be speaking with us about the case before the International Court of Justice filed by South Africa charging Israel with genocide and what organizations and citizens globally are doing to influence this state-centered international body. Now, as long as our persecuted freedom fighters are languishing in the U.S. gulags, we will continue to raise the call to free them all. This is Nefa. I'm here with Yasmin with Maryland to Palestine. We're here at the Protect Free Speech rally
that is protesting the amount of people who've been silenced, particularly in the Maryland area, for their outward positions on the genocide going on in Gaza. Can you explain a little bit more the background of this and what people should know about it?
Yeah, so today we have a bunch of different speakers, different backgrounds, different jobs. We have teachers here, we have students, and all of these people have one thing in common, which is being silenced for being outwardly pro-Palestine and condemning genocide. So a lot of people today are speaking about how they're not only getting backlash from the general public, but genuinely from administration, from people that hold a lot of power and have a big responsibility. They are using their power and responsibility to actively silence people standing up for human rights, which is really scary when you think about these are the people who are running our institutions and running our society and being leaders for our students. And they're the same people who are manufacturing consent for genocide. I ask everyone to make a commitment to yourself that you won't let go of the cause and go about your lives as normal, because we have seen such terrible, horrifying, disgusting things, but just know that every day in Gaza is worse and worse. And if you're not seeing it, that's either because you're not looking at the right things or they are being actively silenced. They're killing our journalists so that we can't see what's happening on the ground. They've killed over 100 journalists so far. They killed Hamza Dahdouh today and another journalist named Mustafa. They're murdering our reporters and then actively wrongly reporting on the genocide. So I would just tell everyone to keep their eyes open, keep up with every story. Try not to look at Palestinians as numbers, even though it's been over 30,000 Palestinians murdered. Try to remember the stories and learn and realize that we're actual human beings. Yeah.
I do have one more question for you. Hold on a second.
We will free Palestine
within our lifetime.
Within our lifetime.
Up next, I would like to.
So I'm sure you've heard about South African government's filing with the International Court of Justice.
Yeah.
Any words or thoughts about that?
I think this is great. I think countries around the world and governments around the world need to hold these fascist governments like the U.S. and Israel accountable, because they are receiving no accountability and acting with total impunity, and Israel has acted with impunity for over 75 years. So we're not surprised, but it's amazing to see that other countries are taking action to hold the International Criminal Court, to hold the U.S., to hold Israel accountable for their crimes or for their complicity. But we also know that this is not a surprise coming from South Africa because of their history of apartheid. And we see apartheid in Palestine right now, but we see even worse than that. We see apartheid, we see ethnic cleansing, we see settler colonialism, we see genocide. So we unequivocally stand in solidarity with South Africans, with their history, and we know that they stand in solidarity with us.
Neffa in the virtual studio with another Not for the Politically Faint of Heart interview. We are privileged and delighted, as I say, to have our comrade Petros Bain back in the studio with us. You may have heard Petros before with someone else. Petros is with the Ujima People's Progress Party, the Black Alliance for Peace in Baltimore, the Young People for Progress, and just a community member, you know, at large, trying to do the right thing. Petros, welcome back to Voices with Vision.
Thank you for having me.
What we invited you here to talk to you about is your article in Hood Communist, Montgomery County Chooses Genocide Over Community. And it was published December 7th in hoodcommunist.org, a really good blog that people should not sleep on. You got to, you know, check it out. But we want to talk to you about this because this is where the intersection of internationalism and local politics intersect, you know, come together. You were basically writing about the Montgomery County Senate delegation in Maryland participating in some censorship, basically. And it's interesting because you and I also were recently at the demonstration in Annapolis, Maryland, around the silencing of teachers and whatnot, around the question of the genocide happening in Gaza. Talk to us about, give us a little lay of the land about this move that Montgomery County Senate delegation has made against a community organization.
CASA is a civil rights organization. They deal with immigrants in Montgomery County. And my experience with them actually was working with them through for the Rent Stabilization Act to basically stabilize the rents for 40% of the population of Montgomery County, because they were basically increasing the rent so much that Montgomery County was starting to become inhabitable for these people that live in Montgomery County, because they are people first and foremost. So CASA has put in a lot of good work in addressing that, and a lot of time in organizing. Obviously, the Montgomery County Senate delegation are who they are. They are a Democrat group. What happened is that CASA put out a tweet in support of the Palestinians, you know, stopping genocide. And the Democrats came back with this very quite interesting letter. They're basically attacking CASA for supporting the Palestinians. What they did was they put the name of the head of the organization and positioned themselves as the reason for CASA's existence and threatening to pull funding from them, from CASA. I haven't seen much reply since then, but those were the threats for supporting Palestine. And, correction. CASA had retracted the statement in hopes that, like, I believe to not lose any funding or not be harmed in some way. So that's just me trying to encapsulate what was going on and what I was writing that letter addressing.
Petros, what I want to do is just maybe read a little bit from that letter. This is the letter from the Senate of Montgomery County Senate delegation talking about CASA. They say that the statements are hurtful, divisive, and anti-Semitic. It reflects a complete lack of understanding of the complex geopolitics of the Middle East, the indigenous roots of the Jewish people, and the long and painful history of anti-Semitism in its myriad forms. What do you make of this charge that CASA, and in fact anyone who expresses solidarity with the Palestinian people, that they are anti-Semitic? And what about this claim of some type of indigenous roots of Jewish people? Can you speak about that?
Well, first things first, those aren't the Zionists. The Zionists are not indigenous to that land. And also, this also is evidence and proof that the line has been drawn in the sand. Any organization, any person that speaks out against the genocide of the Palestinians, or people who are forced to make some sort of separation between Hamas and the conditions of the settler colonial state Israel, they will be met with a ruined reputation, their careers, as we've seen the Montgomery County teachers who have been put on administrative leave. If you make any comments about that, you will be dealt with as those Democrats see fit. That's what I make of it at that point. And again, the line is drawn in the sand. The Democrats in Montgomery County have all agreed that genocide is acceptable, and genocide, the killing of children and families and settler colonialism is acceptable, because they have said that. I think that's very clear. And as a community member, I think we should take that very seriously with things that are going on here, as a cop city is being requested to be developed and created in Baltimore. There is a pilot drone program in Montgomery County. They have offered $20,000 stipends to Montgomery County Police. So an open genocide is what they're saying that is okay.
Mm-hmm. Also, you mentioned in the article where, I guess, in hypocrisy, where the county Senate delegation was talking about having partnered with CASA on some of their work, but then there seems to be a consistent, what they really did was took a position that's kind of consistent in supporting their oppressive foreign policy regarding, well, not foreign policy, but their oppressive position regarding Palestine. The claim where, you know, some of the work that the CASA has been doing on a local level here has not been supported, contrary to what they're saying.
So the Democrats, you know, they're the part of the ruling class. They work together to craft and create American foreign policy, and they also craft to create domestic policy, local policies. So those foreign policies contribute to the forced migration of immigrant communities here and forcing them to live under the conditions that their domestic policy creates. So CASA, as an NGO, steps in and tries to alleviate or mitigate the issues that are created by these people in the ruling class, right? That's the point of it, right? Now they have stepped in and they're trying to dictate and control how CASA operates and how CASA speaks and how CASA develops an opinion on anything, and threatening of taking away funding for dollars that should be put in place to take care all of these, for everybody, to take care of everybody. I mean, these are just little tricks, right? These are just to throw you off the scent or stop you from getting to the primary issue, the primary contradiction, which is the settler ruling class here that we're living in is part and parcel with the settler colonial ruling class in Israel.
Yeah, and in their letter, they say, you know, it says here, actually, I quote, "We support a free press and freedom of speech." This is in the very same letter that they're sending, because CASA did exercise its freedom of speech to express its solidarity with people living under, you know, Zionist apartheid oppression. And yet these Maryland senators, Montgomery County senators, Senate delegation, are saying that they support freedom of the press and freedom of speech that is prohibited by Hamas. And yet here they are trying to use their power, their influence to silence and, of course, create confusion and, like we pointed out, make accusations of anti-Semitism as a political tool to smear someone falsely. I don't really have a question. just that comment. You know what I mean? But the hypocrisy is just staggering, you know.
Yeah, they are clarifying their position on this thing. And as a community member, and maybe a young organizer, I think people should take this very seriously. I think people should look at the situation, look at it with their eyes, and see what's happening. There's a genocide occurring. Right on, a broadcasted genocide, and these people have said, well, this is acceptable, and we will escalate things if you think that, you know, you can make any comments or do anything or organize against that. They've chosen who can be free. They've chosen, so you know, take that. You know, I'd like to give you that comment back. That's what they're doing. They're telling you who's free and who's not free, I think very openly.
Yeah, and then, of course, what we're allowed to say about it, what positions we're allowed mm-hmm. to take, and still have the audacity then to say that they stand for freedom of speech. Then we see the same things occurring in the school system, you know, again, in Montgomery County and Prince George County and in the state of Maryland and around the country, really. But I know, particularly in the state of Maryland, where you have the implementation, the adopting of curriculum and classroom materials and textbooks and educational pieces that are Zionist propaganda. There's mm-hmm. actually yep. classes in elementary and middle school that are created by not a Maryland state educational agency, but created by a Zionist propaganda agency.
Yep, which is not abnormal in the U.S. The school system is about creating perfect citizens within the settler colony, even from its inception. And it's always been about reproducing the myth of white supremacy. It's been about that. Luckily, we have a few educators that I've always been able to push back and tell the truth. But this is not new. This is just a new part of the development of the settler colonial myth of being indigenous to the land.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I was looking at is also clarifying what this formation is, this Montgomery County Senate delegation in Maryland, and it makes a claim of representing the citizens of Montgomery County. And basically, it's just all of the delegates, the elected officials to the House and the Senate, to the seats that represent Montgomery County, Maryland. And they sort of, it's on like a caucus, I go, so to speak, of all of these elected officials. How much can we even say that this is representing the citizens if there's no real consultation, informed consent about what they're doing?
They're not representing the interests of the citizens of Montgomery County. They are representing their own interests. They're trying to hide that behind Montgomery County residents. But we could see quite clearly in CASA's activity that they were representing the interests with the rent caps. Or we can see the firing of teachers, putting teachers on leave, putting up teachers on administrative leave, that they're not representing their interests. The Montgomery County Senate delegation is representing their own interests, and they're hiding behind rhetoric of using words such as the Montgomery County citizens, or as we've seen in the letter, using identities and saying that they're supportive of those things, and that has been a part of those things, just using identities to just, again, confuse people, throw people off their scent, creating myths about how they've done these things.
Mm-hmm. If this was a real people-centered democracy, we'd have a town hall, and they convene all the people and put out notices to make sure everybody knew and ask, what are the citizens' position on what's happening there? And of course, we'd have to have a little political education because there's a lot of confusion going on. And that's another thing about this notion of democracy. People think that we can have a democracy and reduce it to a vote. But informed consent means that there's some information, that people have access to information, historical context, all of that, can digest it, have the opportunity to debate and deliberate over it, and then come to some collective decision. But you have these, in this bourgeois democracy that's in the United States, if we can even call it a democracy at all, these people who are elected claim, you know, to represent the people, don't have to consult them, just make decisions on your behalf, and then even do things like this to tell people what to think. So the unwitting and the unsuspecting will see a letter like this, and then it can serve as propaganda to them. And they never stop to think, well, I was never asked about this. And, you know, I don't even, some people may have to admit, I don't really even know about this situation. You know, you're representing my position on it. I don't even understand it. And some people will be like, I don't even agree with that at all.
One thing before we go, because I know, time is ticking, but you mentioned that CASA made a tweet. This tweet was, you know, against the genocide and solidarity with the Palestinian people, that under pressure, it seems that they withdrew this tweet so as to, you know, not subject their organization to some type of defunding or lack of support. But I want to talk about this. What about this whole concept, this whole idea, this whole state of affairs in the consciousness of people that CASA and the executive director of CASA would, in the first place, issue a tweet like that, express solidarity with Palestinian people who, of course, are not Latinos, who are not, you know, coming to the United States, et cetera, a population of people that some might say are unrelated. And yet the executive director of CASA is expressing solidarity with people far away in the struggle that they're having. What do you make of this phenomenon that we're seeing of people's global support for the Palestinian struggle?
What I think we're seeing is the children who were born of the forced migration of American foreign policy in other areas are coming here, and CASA is seeing that. They're understanding that, and the current place they are in that struggle, they're starting to better understand it, and they may be unconscious or consciously have been organizing against it and trying to fill in the gaps of a settler colony. I hope that they push it further with a public education program to have people here better understand the conditions that they're living in and push back, right? People have been taken away from their homes and forced to stay here and get crushed under how America does their thing, under capitalism, and have no help, no support, no resources. That's really what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that people here start to understand that and know that they have a voice. They can push back. They can say something and not be silenced.
All right. Thank you. So we were speaking with Petros Bain, who is with Ujima People's Progress Party, the Black Lives for Peace, and Young People for Progress, and also is the author of the Hood Communist article, Montgomery County Chooses Genocide Over Community. You can check that out on hoodcommunist.org. It was published on December 7th. Thank you, Petros, for being on Voices with Vision.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Voices with Vision, the show that's not for the politically faint of heart on your Jazz and Justice station. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Nefa in the Virtual Studio with Brother Craig. We have some important news that we want to get deeper insights on. People may know, and you may not know because it's not being reported heavily, that last week a coalition was formed. An international coalition was formed to support South Africa's filing in the International Court of Justice, filing of a charge of genocide against the State of Israel against Palestinians. South Africa filed this, and then last week, a newly formed International Coalition to Stop Genocide in Palestine, the ICSGP, issued a sign-on letter trying to mobilize organizations, or would we say maybe civil society, to endorse this filing and to support South Africa, a state motion to hold Israel accountable for the State of Israel accountable for its genocide. With us right now to go deeper into that are two of the core organizers of this motion. One is no stranger to Voices with Vision at all. We have a lot, and it's Jamu Baraka, who's the chair of Black Alliance for Peace Coordinating Committee, and also Adrian Pine, a visiting professor of anthropology at the California Institute for Integral Studies, and one of the coordinators of the International Coalition to Stop Genocide in Palestine. Welcome to you both to Voices with Vision.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, thanks for having us.
Now, I want to kick it off, and we want to give people some context, some background to this filing. We don't want to assume. I know people probably heard about the general background, but let's go back into it again. But also in that context, and what people may have heard less of, is the formation of this coalition and the significance of this coalition in supporting the state move to hold Israel accountable as a civil society counterpart. Adrian, you want to start, and then Ajamu chime in after?
Sure.
Thanks, Netfa. We formed this coalition actually before South Africa had invoked the Genocide Convention, because we saw such a desperate need for some country to do exactly that. Our friend Sam Husseini, who's a journalist in DC, has been really focused on this issue for several months. And former Ambassador Craig Murray from the UK has also been writing articles about it and calling for some country to do this. And too much time had passed. This genocide had and continues, obviously. And so that was initially the call, was to find a country to do it. Under the Genocide Convention, which hundreds of countries are party to, every country that is party to it has a positive obligation to invoke the convention if genocide is happening in order to stop it. That's in Article 1. So it seemed something pretty easy. And so when South Africa signed, which was right before our first meeting, our call obviously changed immediately to getting countries of intervention, which is the formal mechanism for supporting the South African case in the International Court of Justice. Now, the case moved very quickly, as I guess they do, and they scheduled the hearing within just a couple weeks from when they initially invoked the Genocide Convention. So the hearing is this Thursday and Friday at The Hague at the ICJ. And what we saw to be particularly important, you know, we know that there have been teams of lawyers working to advocate and, you know, and other individuals advocating with high-level government officials in various friendly governments around the world. But we felt a need for the social movement that has been out on the streets to start really focusing in on this mechanism, because the Genocide Convention is the strongest mechanism through international law that exists to stop genocide. That's what it's designed for. And so what we did initially then was to put out this letter, a sign-on letter. So on Monday, we issued a press release that over 900, at this point, we have nearly 1,000 signatures from unions, social movements, human rights organizations, religious organizations from all over the world that have signed on of the world to issue declarations of intervention in support.
You're going out, Adrian. So right now we don't hear anything. So maybe
check that finding.
Yeah, Adrian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were going out. We didn't get like the last sentence or so.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. So maybe John was.
You want me to wrap up?
Mm-hmm. You might have. Yeah, wrap up and let you know, because the connection is low.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
It is what it is.
Okay, let me start.
Now we're not hearing.
How about if I just?
Oh, go ahead.
Go.
Yeah, and I will cover a little bit of the pieces that went out, Adrian, and many of the main points that Adrian made, very very important in terms of clarifying the role of this coalition. As she said, we began to assemble people before the filing of the case by South Africa, understanding that there was a political imperative here to raise this issue of genocide. And we knew that pressure had to come from the masses, had to come from the public. But with the filing of the case by South Africa, which, as Adrian indicated, is a part of the mechanism when states have ratified the Genocide Convention, was that it allowed us then to broaden the focus, to encourage other states to demonstrate support for this filing, while simultaneously reminding the public that it has a special role to play also in putting pressure on the authorities in their particular state to help with putting the South African, elevating the South African filing and putting pressure on the court to recognize that this is an issue that, in fact, has to be moved on quickly. As Adrian also said, the process was an expedited process, meaning that because the egregious nature of what's happening in Gaza, the South Africans requested that this be an expedited process because of the fact that it's an active and intensifying genocide unfolding. So the International Court of Justice responded accordingly, and the case will be adjudicated on the 11th and the 12th. So this is where we are with this process, and it has enormous implications, of course, because along with the fact that the target is, in fact, the main perpetrators of the genocide, which is the Israeli state, there's implications for the enabler of the genocide, if you will, and that is the United States of America. There are mechanisms there and definitions of genocide that make those states that are enabling the genocide to be complicit and to also be open to prosecution. So these are some of the beginning of the discussion around the legal issues. And we'll, I guess, talk about that and the political issues and clarify some of the relationships between, for example, the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court that probably more people are aware of than the International Court of Justice.
Well, why don't you go into that? Because I think that is an important distinction that people probably really don't know.
Well, just real briefly, the International Court of Justice is, you remember Malcolm used to talk about we got to take them to the world court. Well, this is literally sort of the world court. And it is a court that was put in place to adjudicate disputes between states. Okay? So in this case with the South African filing, they are evoking the Genocide Convention as part of their responsibility. And they are charging Israel with the violation of the Genocide Convention in this case. So they are bringing up a question of international law with Israel. The International Criminal Court, on the other hand, can prosecute individuals for various crimes, crimes against humanity, war crimes, genocide. And so, you know, those cases can be adjudicated based on those crimes being committed or alleged to be committed. But the court's authority is limited to those states that have signed on to the Rome Treaty, which gives the court its authority to exist. And it makes it a little complicated when criminal activity is alleged against those individuals who are in states that have not signed on to the Rome Treaty and therefore theoretically not under the purview of the International Criminal Court. So we have two courts in The Hague, but with slightly different purviews.
Mm-hmm. And the International Criminal Court seen as largely a tool of imperialism, and then they can't really give cases against a whole state because they're usually the former colonized states, and a lot of times African people or black people, but basically individuals. And they but then the International Court of Justice is an extension of the United Nations, if I have that correct.
Yeah, they're definitely, the latitude is broader and even more politicized with the International Criminal Court. And many people have made that allegation that it's become an instrument of Western intervention, especially when you look at the track record and you see the number of individuals who have been charged, who tend to be on the African continent. And the other ones who are not African were those individuals who were in the crosshairs of U.S. Imperial and Western European imperial aggression.
You know, Ajamu and Adrian, I think something that you want to get into and something I want to ask about, and that is, you know, what do you make of this moment? Because Israel has been committing these crimes of occupation, crimes of settler colonialism, crimes of genocide for decades. This has been going on, but now we see this massive outcry. We have South Africa invoking the law around genocide and using it now in this case. What do you attribute this to, or what significance do you attribute this kind of massive outcry that's going on, this sort of change in the political landscape on the issue of Zionism, on the issue of settler colonialism, on the issue of Israel and genocide? And what do we know about this world court, and what are the prospects? What can we expect? Who are the people that would be making decisions there?
That's me or Adrian?
Either one or both.
Why don't you pick one for? Go ahead, Adrian.
Okay, go ahead.
I can start and then you can pick up. Well, what Israel has been doing all along, definitionally, has been genocidal. It has laid the groundwork for genocide by its apartheid regime, by having different classes of people by birth, by
oh man, I'm sorry, Adrian, you went out, you've gone out again, and we're not hearing you right now. We heard different classes by birth, and that was the last thing we heard. I don't know if you can hear me, but Jamu, why don't you pick up? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'll do that. I mean, and so unfortunately, we can't hear Adrian because she's been playing such a major role in this coalitional effort. But Craig's question is very important. The question basically is.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, she didn't hear.
Did I cut out?
Yeah, for a while we had asked Jamu to pick up, so we missed.
I'm so sorry.
Good bit.
Oh, I was okay. No, it's.
Oh, now you cut out again. Well, if you can hear me,
I'm so sorry.
We're going to have to let John pick up because it's just too much interference and we won't be able to manage the interview this way. When you hear me, know that we might have to wait till Adrian comes back on. Let us know.
Dennis could take place can you, live.
Yes, yeah, she's talking.
It cut out again.
Yeah. So we're going to have to go with the Jamu. We're going to have
okay,
to.
Okay, yeah.
We can't.
I think you should this just go with the Jamu. We'll keep you. Sorry.
That's all right. We'll keep you.
So I could go ahead and pick up and respond to Craig's question. And basically, very important question, Craig, because in essence, you're asking, you know, why now? I mean, it's quite clear that many of the policies that have been pursued by the occupying power, Israel, have had some genocidal implications, including the very beginning of the establishment of Israel in 1948 with the Nakba and the dislocation, the ejection, if you will, the ethnic cleansing of over 750,000 Palestinians. But this situation here is even more egregious. In fact, we're looking at numbers that eclipse the numbers from 1948. The Nakba, the definition of it is the catastrophe. Well, we have had something like 85% of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip who have been displaced. We've had, 23,000 now people who have been murdered by the Israeli state, a state that has the responsibility to protect the population that it currently occupies. This is under international law. And the fact that over 70% of the people murdered who have lost their lives, systematically attacked by the Israelis, are women and children. So this is, in fact, genocidal. We've seen the images of the attacks on the hospitals. We've seen the deliberate attacks on residential buildings, food storage, roadways. Now, the fact is, what I just said was we have seen this because this is what makes this situation quite different than the other attacks on the people of Gaza. And that is, it's been massively covered by the press. And as a consequence of that, people have been, for the first time, really exposed to the realities of the occupation and the viciousness of that occupation in Gaza and on the West Bank. It's important to remind your listeners that even as the Israelis were justifying their attack on Gaza as a response to so-called Hamas, they unleashed settlers on the West Bank, and they also unleashed their military on the West Bank, where there's no Hamas there. But it was part of the process of the agenda of the Netanyahu government that has its intent to cleanse of Palestinians, both Gaza and the West Bank. They are the ones that have said quite openly, from the river to the sea, it will be a Jewish supremacist state. So this has been their policies. And for the first time now, people are really beginning to understand the realities and the implications of those policies.
I want to ask you about this quote that has been on social media by yourself, Jamu. You said here, it is time to bury innocence. What we are witnessing in Gaza are Western values in full display. Gaza is how the U.S. was created and how all of the Western colonial capitalist nations were born. This is the shift in understanding and consciousness that we must make so that we have no illusions about who the enemy is and what must be done. Who is the enemy and what must be done?
Well, I mean, you know, it's you know, for those of us who have been on the receiving end of this colonial capitalist project, we have to be very clear and characterize correctly the enemy, because they are, in fact, our enemies. I want people to understand we're speaking primarily here as the Black Alliance of Peace, and not the coalition as a whole, okay? In the forces that seek to control and to contain us, to exploit our labor, to systematically murder us, to deny us our freedom and self-determination, they must be seen quite clearly as our enemy. And we recognize that when we were stolen from the African continent, brought to the what became the Americas in order to have our labor exploited to create value for what became the West and so-called Western civilization, then we are quite clear, those of us who are conscious, who the enemy is. And what we said in that meme was that it's important that people understand, even people who don't recognize themselves as part of an enemy experience, if you will, that the legitimacy of their project is in question, because their entire Western project was based on violence, systematic violence. And the establishment of the United States of America was based on a colonial project, which at the core of that project is violence. It is, in the case of the U.S., to carry out a genocide that resulted in almost a complete eradication of the indigenous peoples. So this understanding of what this Western project is all about is important. And it's important because we don't have the luxury of believing or trying to tell ourselves that what we see in Gaza is an aberration. No, it's a continuation of the colonial and settler colonial project that started in 1492. So when you're clear about that, then we won't be confused by members of the Black misleadership class that would tell us that we have some kind of responsibility to support this racist project in Israel. So that's what we meant about having clarity and burying this notion that the U.S. is innocent, and burying the notion among ourselves that we have the luxury of being unaware.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, maybe, I don't know if these, they're going to seem like a couple disparate or disjointed questions, maybe. One is really, the coalition and the moment of the ICJ filing, what should it compel us to do as the non-state actors, as the civil society or the popular movement? What's our next step for us? You know, where's this going? And I know there's a call for mobilizations around this. That's one. The other thing is that as we see the heinousness of the settler colonial state, Israel's settler colonial state, and the backing by U.S., that they're doubling down also on their propaganda, on their usage of all the media to keep their narrative or their, you know, reputation in a certain way. But then just recently come out by the Intercept, I don't know if you saw, it says that CNN runs Gaza coverage past Jerusalem team operating under the shadow of IDF censor. The Jerusalem Bureau has long reviewed all CNN stories related to Israel and Palestine. Now it's helping shape the network's coverage of the war. If you can look at that in terms of what is our responsibility as people on the ground and organizers trying to, you know, or who are out, you know, popular movement, and then this propaganda that they're trying to keep the masses of people confused about what's going on. I don't know if that, if you can tie them together.
Yeah, I mean, they are together. And well, in terms of the next steps, what we envision will happen is that there's going to be a favorable dispensation for the South African claim, not only in terms of what we have seen as non-lawyers, but just people who can see and think. It's quite clear that what we see unfolding in Gaza is in fact a genocide. One of the elements that some claim is difficult to prove when you have a claim of genocide is the notion of intent. Well, in this case, we don't believe that's going to be that difficult, since we have so many public declarations coming from Israeli officials that make it quite clear what the intent is in Gaza. It is to remove the population. It is to establish full hegemony from the river to the sea. It is to inflict collective punishment on the people of Gaza because they believe that everybody in Gaza are in fact their enemies because they are supporters of Hamas, or more broadly, supporters of the Palestinian resistance. So the very statements from Israeli officials, we believe, will condemn that entity. When that happens, then a number of things kick in. We said earlier that the International Criminal Court can no longer ignore what's happening in Gaza. They must launch an investigation to begin to determine what individuals may be responsible for this genocide. If there's a fair inquiry into that, we believe quite strongly that not only will you have the high officials of the Israeli government, beginning with Netanyahu, but also his defense minister and others who should be under indictment, but with the complicity of the U.S., that should very well extend to President Biden, Anthony Blinken, and Lloyd Austin at a minimum, okay? So this is what we expect to happen. And even if it doesn't happen, we have a responsibility as human rights defenders to raise these issues and raise the contradictions. We got to remind your audience that even with a favorable decision by the International Criminal Court, remember now we're dealing with gangsters, and we're speaking primarily here as the Black Alliance of Peace, and not the coalition as a whole. So our characterization of these states are that these are gangster states. They operate outside of the law. That's why they're called outlaws, okay? These are rogue states. And in 1983, for example, when the International Criminal Court ruled against the Reagan administration, that had mined the harbors of Nicaragua, they ruled against the Reagan administration and ordered them to remove the mines. Well, being the gangster state that the U.S. is, it simply ignored that. The same thing could happen with this decision. But we're going to make sure that the moral authority, the legal interpretations of the International Court of Justice is well known and make it impossible that even if you try to ignore that decision, politically, you're going to continue to pay a price. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that they're never going to be able to recover from this. They have been completely exposed. The Western Project has been completely exposed. And this is of their own doing. And we're going to make sure that we help to accelerate that process.
Mm. Thank you, Jamu Baraka, and also Adrian Pine, who I wish we could keep on the connection. Adrian, a visiting professor of anthropology at the California Institute for Integral Studies and one of the coordinators of the International Coalition to Stop Genocide in Palestine, and Ajamu Baraka, one of the core coordinators as well, and also the chair of the Coordinating Committee of the Black Alliance for Peace. Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
That brings us to a conclusion this morning. But before we close, PACA is inviting you to the life of Alonzo Smith and the founding of PACA, that's the Pan-African Community Action, on Wednesday, January 10th, 7 p.m. at the 1 DC Black Workers and Wellness Center at 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue in Southeast DC, right across the street from the Anacostia Metro Station on the Green Line. This is to commemorate the legacy of Alonzo Smith, a lifelong D.C. resident murdered by D.C. Special Police, and how his case led to the founding of PACA.
Yes, and for more information, go to PACA DMV on Facebook or PACA DMV on Twitter or on Instagram. Please wear a mask. Some will be provided. There's a little spike in some COVID and some other stuff going on around here, so we want to protect yourself and others.
Thank you for listening, and remember to tune in to Voices with Vision every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and follow and like Voices with Vision on Facebook.
If you're so inclined, you can follow me, Netfa, on Twitter, on X, used to be known as Twitter, Netfa Free. That's N-E-T-F-A Free. And don't forget, you can also listen and subscribe to Voices with Vision as a podcast on Google Podcast or iTunes or Player FM. Just search for Voices with Vision WPFW. Keep it here for Crossroads with Roach Browning and Akichi Taifa. Make an effort to stay politically educated, organized, and committed to the fight for the liberation of your people. Or fall back.
It goes F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people.
Come on.
F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your freedom.
We are L-I-B-R-B-G. We live F-R-E or D-I-E. We lace music with code, just something to bring us closer. Kick true, the young black youth like we're supposed to. No swine in our rovers or Louis Vuitton holsters. We in the trench with young 50 cents and street soldiers. The ones they ain't lock up and send the foreign waters to fight for something they ain't got in their own borders. It's us, the free unit, they ain't holding us back. We score the soundtrack to this movement. Y'all just rap, brat, black on black and clap about that. State trooper shot, Miss Everly's boy in the back, Miss Rogers boy in the back. While we ain't firing back, the boys is gone and they ain't coming back. We gotta go back, San Kofa right and exact. It's the red, green, and the black.
It goes F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people.
Come on.
F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your freedom.
The great jazz master Sonny Rollins always says, music is an open sky. This is Willard Jenkins inviting you to join me for my new WPFW show, Open Sky, Sunday afternoons from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. We'll explore great jazz classics, including many from the beloved Great American Songbook, during our first hour. And then, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. will be my traditional What's New, the new release hour, as we check out what today's contemporary artists are up to with a raft of new releases. That's Open Sky, Sundays from 2 until 4 p.m. with your host Willard Jenkins on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM. Don't sleep!
The best in live music entertainment is coming to Bethesda Theater. Peabo Bryson, the legendary voice of love, for two big shows on Friday, January 26th at 8:30 p.m. and Saturday, January 27th at 8 p.m. Celebrate legend Bob Marley at the annual One Love Birthday Bash featuring popular reggae band I and I Rhythm on Saturday, February 3rd at 8 p.m. Celebrate more love at the Quiet Storm Valentine's Celebration featuring live performances of classic love songs on Saturday, February 10th at 8 p.m. Peabo Bryson on January 26th and 27th, Bob Marley, the Birthday Bash on February 3rd, and Quiet Storm Valentine's Celebration on February 10th. More info and tickets at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
District Collective starts the new year with their inaugural Creators Super Jam. The Super Jam brings top rappers, singers, and beatmakers from the DMV to the Atlas Performing Arts Center for an evening of original songs and jams that I'm sure that you enjoy. The show begins at 7 p.m. For tickets and more info, go to atlasarts.org. That's Tuesday, January 9th, at the Atlas Performing Arts Center on 8th Street Northeast. See you at the Super Jam.
Mm-hmm.
This is author and activist Miko Peled, and I'm inviting you to join me for the Miko Peled Hour, beginning on Tuesday, November 14th, from 7 to 8 p.m. We're going to discuss all things Palestine and beyond. That's the Miko Peled Hour, beginning Tuesday, November 14th at 7 p.m.